Caroline, Willie, D-Vase, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. We'll catch up with TD, Teron Davenport, in 1 hour. We'll get his thoughts on what the Titans have done so far in free agency, the most recent move, a trade for cornerback L'Jarius Sneed, and then, of course, what comes next. Still gotta address the defensive line. Still probably need to address inside linebacker, safety position. Of course, obviously, the offensive line. Lloyd Cushenberry's a star, but that's not everything. So we'll catch up with TD in 1 hour. But I did want to touch on Rick Barnes and the Tennessee Vols. Because I remember very vividly, I said, I guarantee you that the Vols will not make the Sweet 16 this year because it's just going to be the same thing of the Vols falling short in the postseason after winning all those games in December and January and February, and come March, they just pooped their pants, and they did make the Sweet 16.
The Vols on you.
Okay, all right. Good one.
The joke's on you, the Vols on you.
Now, you still got to get past the Sweet 16. Like, falling short in the Sweet 16 is not going to be good enough. And I know a lot of Tennessee fans are going to be upset if they, again, don't make the Elite Eight, if they don't beat Creighton coming up on Friday night. So you still, you know, the onus is still on Rick Barnes. He's not completely off the hook here. But it felt like that game on Saturday against Texas, the Rick Barnes Bowl, as I was affectionately calling it, it felt like that had the makings of a, I don't want to call it a trap game because I don't think that that's a team that you overlook, but it just had the makings of a game that where you just poop the bed. And the shooting was absolutely horrendous. It was a snoozer of a game. Like we said earlier, 3 of 25 from 3, but Tennessee still found a way to win. They made the shots when it mattered. They made their free throws at the end of the game, and they played fantastic defense all night long, found a way to beat Texas and advance to the Sweet 16. And I'm happy for Rick Barnes for kind of getting that one off his back, because that one means a little bit more, playing a team that fired him a few years ago in Texas.
I was fascinated by that game. D-Mace, you and I talked a lot during the week last week about how the three-point shot in one game can make you or break you.
Totally.
Think about, and Tennessee, I think this speaks a lot to how layered Tennessee is. They can have a game where they start from three at 1 for 21. Like 3 for 25 is, yes, but they were 1 for 21 and made a couple big ones down the stretch that they needed. But they're able to overcome that. That's not easy to do. Baylor is one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country all year long. Tennessee is not, right? Tennessee is streaky from three. They've got capable three-point shooters.
They're solid from three.
And this is the mistake I made in my bracket. But Baylor and Kentucky went down because they didn't have a great day shooting. They need to be shooting well from three. And they weren't great enough defensively to make up for it, right? Tennessee is great enough defensively to make up for it. Duke, right? I really thought James Madison was going to give Duke everything they can handle. But Duke comes out, the kid hits 8 threes. That guy has been a good player. He had the game of his life. No Duke players ever hit 8 threes in a game. The three-point line's further back than it ever has been when Bobby Hurley and Billy McCaffrey and Grant Hill and all those guys were playing. And this guy hits 8. He couldn't miss.
And it was JMU over. JMU was the sexy pick over Duke.
I really thought – I had JMU when it went in that game in my bracket, but Duke absolutely throttled him. And part of it, just on a day where the shots don't fall, if you rely on the three or if you give up a bunch of threes, that's a big variable there. So I think that's where Tennessee's protection kicked in, right? They're able to find a way to win a game where you have a nightmare from the outside, a nightmare. Now, can they do it against Creighton? I don't know if they can go 1 for 21 and beat Creighton. Creighton's better. Not that Creighton was shooting the ball real well. They should have lost, right? They are a front end of 1-1 away from losing to Oregon. Yep. Oregon had them. Another coach going up against his former team, Dana Altman, who was the coach at Creighton for a long time.
That's right.
He's got Oregon. He's got his big man on the court. Creighton is really, really well coached. They let the ball go into the big man, who had a great game. And he's a great player, but he's not a great free throw shooter. He's like a 60%. Sure enough, they foul him, misses the front end of the 1-1. Creighton hits a tough two to tie it. It goes to overtime, and they outlast him in OT. So it is so tough. This is going to be the question. And we threw this out there last week to the Vol fans. If they would lose this game in the Sweet 16, how devastated are you? Because it's The line is going to be probably 2 or 3 points, one way or the other. Mm-hmm. I think Tennessee will probably be a slight favorite in the game.
Creighton is a 4?
3.
3.
They're a 3. In the Big East, Big East has not lost in the tournament yet. That's a tough league. They had a couple bubble teams that were the first out that didn't make it. It's a deep, deep league where every game is tough. So Creighton is not going to back down to Tennessee at all. I think Tennessee's got a good chance to win, but you better not go 1 for 21.
You can't go 1 for 21.
Mm. Somebody better be hitting some big shots.
Credit to Tennessee for finding a way to win, even when it was just simply nothing was going in from three. But that's now 2 out of their last 3 games where shooting has been a massive concern. That Mississippi State game in the SEC tournament, my goodness, it was almost like they were dealing with a ball 20 pounds heavier than everybody else was. Nothing was going in. And against St. Peter's, they played well and they took care of business and they did what they were supposed to do. But 3 for 25 from three is not good enough. And it's definitely not good enough to continue to win games throughout the tournament. But at this point in the season, it's survive in advance. At this point, 3 for 25 from three, that doesn't matter anymore. You won the game. You found a way to win. You played great defense. You had clutch shots when you needed it. You won that game and you can move on. But I think that both things can be true. That you can be relieved and happy that Tennessee, encouraged that Tennessee found a way to win even when they weren't shooting well, but also equally as concerned that they haven't been shooting well as of late.
Yeah, and that's they have one thing that travels just like football. Defense. They have defense. That's going to continue to be their saving grace. Even when they're not shooting well, they're able to pick up the defensive intensity. Now, when you're scoring, it's easier to set up your defense, and it's easier to get into if you want to press for a quarter or not. It's easier to get into those sets after made baskets. But Tennessee is a really good defensive team. Even after missed baskets, they're able to get back on the defensive end. They're gonna need that moving forward continually, because if Kinnick has another one of these games, he is Ziegler, it's going to be very difficult, especially against Creighton. Creighton's a big team. They got a 7'1" center in the middle. So Adu, he's going to have his work cut out for him this game. And if Kinnick is not shooting the way that we've seen him shoot throughout the season, I don't know if they're going to beat Creighton. Creighton's a big team, play good defense. And if you're not shooting well from the outside, it's going to be a hard matchup for you if you can't get those sort of easy buckets from the outside as you have been getting. And I think we discussed it before the season, before the tournament start. They have to find someone else beside Kinnick. I know Ziegler is the leader from the point guard position, but they got to find secondary scoring from starting this game against Creighton, and if they expect to move forward. They're going to find someone that's going to be able to consistently create for themselves outside of Kinnick, because the further they get, the harder it's going to be for them to score a basket. So they got to find that second, that third scorer, that bench scorer. They didn't get any of that this past game. They got a little from Ziegler, but hell, he shot the
ball. James had a solid game.
Yeah, he had a solid game. But Ziegler didn't shoot well from the outside. Neither did Kinnick. They're going to have to find that second or that third and fourth guy that can come in and not only give them the minutes, but give them the points too.
And you can say that they're due, right? Uh-huh. They've had a couple of bad shooting performances now, especially Kinnick, right? Mm-hmm. He is sort of due for one of those 35 or 40-point games.
But here's going to be the problem with him, and this is going to be the problem with him moving to the next level. They're going to continue to get physical with him, and they're going to make it very difficult for him, because with a jump shooter, you got to be physical. You got to be a guy that can shoot from the outside really good. You got to be physical coming off those screens and everything else.
Teams
you
will gotta stop
put,
stuff.
Yeah, you got to put a body on him to make it difficult, and it seems like when you do that with Kinnick, he has a harder time scoring. That's when, and I'm telling you, Creighton's going to do the same thing. They're going to put a body on him. They're going to bang him around a little bit and make it harder for him as the game goes to get those open three-pointers or to get those wide-open two-pointers.
I think, too, McDermott, the coach for Creighton, I think he will have a very good game plan of how to try to guard Kinnick. He did a really good job. Oregon has had like two guys who could score, and they made it tough on those guys. And the Oregon guys still made some huge shots. That was a great game. It went to double overtime, and Creighton pulled away in the second overtime. So if you just look at the final, 86-73, it looks like they won easy. It was a double overtime. They should have lost, right? Oregon had them on the ropes at the end of regulation. But I was impressed with McDermott and some of the things he can do. What the difference is, though, between the two teams on paper is connect. I don't think Creighton has the one great player who can take over a game. They have a very good balanced team. They're efficient offensively. They have four or five different guys who can shoot. They're solid, solid. But they don't have a connect. They do not have that. They'll have to try to overcome that as a team, but they will have a good game plan. I think this is a toss-up. That's why I asked the question. Prepare yourselves, Tennessee fans. If they lose this game, are you going to be, Rick Barnes has got to go, get him out of here, all that stuff? Because this is a game, if you played it 10 times, I think Tennessee might win six, but I think Creighton would win at least four.
What was the response? I'm curious. How did Tennessee fans feel?
I think the consensus was, you tell me if you thought differently, D-Mace, is they've got to make the final eight. If they lost in the final eight and they lost to Purdue, I think they could live with it. I think if they lose this game, there will be extreme disappointment. But Creighton is really, really good. But I think here in Nashville, if you throw out Creighton, you still have this connotation of it's not a Power Five, even though they're from the Big East. It's a great
powerhouse basketball conference.
Yeah, I mean, anything less than the Elite Eight. And then not even that, I think if you go into the Elite Eight and you get blown out, then people are going to blame that on Rick Barnes. If you go into the Elite Eight and say you lose, but it's back and forth, and they may hit the last second shot, I think that looks a little bit different than getting beat by 10, 12 points.
That's a good point.
In the Elite Eight. They got to win a Sweet 16. They have to
get to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, even if – because, listen, and I was listening to Joe and Robbie this morning, and Joe brought it up. Listen, even if Tennessee goes out and they call the right scheme, the plays, and, you know, everything else, and they getting wide open shots, and they're missing their shots as they did against Texas, if they lose, they're still going to blame it on Rick Barnes. When in actuality, it's not Rick Barnes' fault. He put him in a perfect play. They ran a set.
Still following him.
I know, but that's
and that's what's wrong about
exactly.
the perception sometimes.
Exactly. But perception is reality. If they lose in a Sweet 16, I don't care if they lose by 1 point or 21 points. People are always going to say, Rick Barnes couldn't do it. He couldn't do it.
Because
I think that's what's scary about this game.
That it's the same old song and dance. Even if it's a 1 point or a 25-point loss, a loss is a loss. And you were regarded, you were viewed as one of the best teams in the country. Like, Tennessee is a serious national championship contender. That falling short of even the Elite Eight, that's a massive disappointment, not just this year, but because we've been here before.
I'm telling
you. We've had a Tennessee team that was a national championship contender that fell short of expectations. And then the next year, a really good Tennessee team that fell short of expectations. That it's continued, you know, irritability year over year over year, and constantly getting this renewed hope every year of really great recruits and being one of the best teams in one of the most competitive basketball conferences in the SEC. But you can't get to the Elite Eight. So I think at this point, the manner or the fashion with which Tennessee falls short of the Elite Eight, if in fact they do, it doesn't matter. It's still the fact that you fell short. The Elite Eight,
that's a different
story. It
may not matter to some. I think that's why I think it should matter. I'm trying to set the table for how tough this game is going to be. Creighton smoked.
They don't care.
Creighton smoked UConn.
UT fans don't care. I mean,
earlier
in
the season.
Let me say that.
Creighton has a 19-point win over UConn earlier this year. That's how good they are. Now, that was at Creighton, and that was one night, but they're that kind of good.
But they don't want to hear
Tennessee fans care.
Yeah, ball fans don't care.
I know.
Rick Barnes,
I'm just going to be the guy that points it out, right? They're going to react how they're going to react. I'm just
pointing out, if he loses,
this is a tough game.
They're going to go back to Rick Barnes can't get – because, again
– If they were playing Oregon, it'd be a different
narrative.
Deal.
Why is Rick Barnes going to fire Texas?
I don't care.
He couldn't win in March.
I don't care if they were playing Oregon, Duke, Carolina, Houston, whoever. Vol fans expect them to get past the Sweet 16. That's just the way it is.
That.
And you
that
should expect
that. Should be the
because
yeah,
you have one of the best. And when I say one of the best, I mean one of the top five teams in the country. I'm not just saying one of the best and I'm considering 20 or 30 other teams. No. When I say best, I mean you got a top five team that should win. Now, should is a big word.
Auburn should have beat Yale.
Because they're going to have
Bruce Pearl's got a big old target on his back yes. now because they didn't.
But what is Auburn going to do? Not have Bruce Pearl? Bruce Pearl's brought them life when they were dead in the water.
That's the same thing Kentucky going through. But yeah. I'm telling Vol fans, if everything sets up properly, I believe they would have to play Purdue in Elite Eight, right?
Yep. That's how it's set up. Purdue looks
if
good.
If y'all have not watched Purdue, that team is on a mission.
Yeah, and it's in the game.
That team, I don't know who beats them. Honestly, I really don't know who beats them this year because they are playing. They're playing fundamental ball. They're playing old school ball with a little mix of new school ball. Where we gonna dump it down to the big fella, and y'all cannot stop him. He's like Shaq.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Like, seriously.
He is.
We'll cross that bridge if we get to it.
I'm just saying.
Nothing is guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed.
I think I would be floored if Purdue lost before if they lost in the Sweet 16.
And they're playing in Detroit. I thought it was a big factor yesterday that they had the crowd. Mm-hmm. Right? Sometimes in those games, the underdog starts swirling a little bit. Everybody else starts rooting against the number one seed. That wasn't the case yesterday because Purdue had the home court. Where they were, I forget where the game was, but they took over that building. And Utah State, after a while, it's like you said with the Shaq, they had no answers.
Yeah,
they just kept fouling.
Everybody
had three fouls at halftime, and it was over. And the shooters that Purdue has.
They were knocking them down.
They weren't tight. You know, last year they got so tight in that game against Fairleigh Dickinson. They were leaving wide open. They just couldn't make it.
Yeah.
They got over that nervousness. Now I think they're loose. They're feeling good. They're going to be tough to beat.
And they've got the big man of all big men in this league.
Oh, yeah. Zach
Edey.
You get a big man and you get four shooters around him, that's hard
tough.
To guard.
Yeah.
Bob has a thought on the Vols defense. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyAnda.com. What's up, Bob?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Here's the deal. That game against Texas was a spectacular defensive effort on the part of the Vols. Nobody's talking about their defense.
We just talked about it.
That's why they won.
Defense, yeah.
Wonderful.
We said we won, and that's the only thing. That's what I believe, Bob, is going to keep them going is that's the one thing they can lean on is their defense. When they're not shooting the ball well on the offensive end, they can always rely on their defense because they're going to play tough defense under Rick Barnes.
Unbelievable. That's what won them that game, and everybody played defense. And I'll tell you what, if they bring a walkout with Adu at the same time, I think they can handle Purdue.
Let's get to Purdue first.
Because Creighton got a big 7-1 center, too. So
yeah, let's get to Purdue first.
This could be a prelude to what's going to happen.
If the last few years have not taught you anything, it is, let's not jump to conclusions,
especially
in March and especially with this coach, and I appreciate your call, Bob. Tennessee's defense was fantastic on Saturday night against Texas. They held him to 58 points. Mm-hmm. The question is, how sustainable is that? Because not every single week, especially when you get into the Creightons and the Purdues of March Madness, playing really good defense and going 3-for-25 from three, that ain't going to cut it.
Right. But I do think they will play good defense. I think no matter where you have the game, no matter when the game is, the defense will be there, I think. Mm-hmm. I think Tennessee can count on that. That's their biggest strength.
I 100% agree. That has always been their greatest strength. And then Dalton Knecht has just been kind of the missing piece offensively. All right, 615-737-1025 is the phone number. I want to get into your thoughts on that. But coming up next, I think we all have a tendency to do this. You know, looking back, we might remember the great times rather than the not-so-great times. Maybe we have a tendency as people, as sports fans, to rewrite history a little bit. I saw some Vanderbilt fans maybe rewriting history a little bit yesterday. So let's set the record straight. I want to get Willie's thoughts on some Vanderbilt basketball conversation that was being had last night, and we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays for broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios. keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. We'll catch up with TD in 30 minutes. So this time of year is always the time of year of what I call Santa Claus schools, like the schools that only come up this month and you only think about once a year during March Madness and then you forget about entirely. Like Fairleigh Dickinson is one of those schools. St. Peter's is one of those schools. Like teams that always pop up in March Madness and you're like, oh yeah, I remember that team from last year. GCU, Grand Canyon, I think is one of those schools that always finds itself in March, but it's not really, you know, a big power player in any other sport, not really a school that you would consider or think about throughout the rest of the year. Santa Claus school. Think about them during March.
It's quite an interesting school. If the more you look at that, there's some...
Yeah, there's been like, some interesting headlines.
I had never heard of it until Bryce Drew was hired there.
And it's a publicly traded company.
Right, it's a for-profit.
Yeah.
Which is the only school of its kind in the tournament, but...
Interesting.
But Bryce Drew is there. They've got some huge backers. Like, the number one is the Jerry Colangelo connection in Phoenix. He ran the Diamondbacks. He ran the Suns. He ran USA Basketball. They have some money, and they're spending it well on the NIL, and they put together a really good team. Man, they're good.
They're good.
They were right there with Alabama.
We were neck and neck with Alabama. In that game yesterday, I think what could only be described as beautifully chaotic.
Yes.
Or horrifically beautiful, like whatever you want to put it. It was missed shot after missed shot. It was a fun watch. But I read this article on azcentral.com, a local Phoenix, Arizona newspaper, and this was a quote from Brian Mueller, the athletic director at Grand Canyon. It's talking about how, you know, how are they going to keep Bryce Drew if Grand Canyon's always in March and they're always winning games and they're always a team in headlines around this type of year. How can Grand Canyon hold on to Bryce Drew from going to a larger program? But Brian Mueller, the AD at Grand Canyon, said he's going to be hotly pursued. I believe Vanderbilt made a huge mistake, of course, insinuating Vanderbilt firing Bryce Drew after the 2019 season. I've heard a lot of conversation on social media yesterday, kind of reiterating that same sentiment of, look at how dumb Vanderbilt looks now. Firing Bryce Drew, they just went toe-to-toe with Alabama. How do you feel about that conversation, Willie?
I have a lot of thoughts on that conversation. Number one, the first thought is this is a fun conversation to have on a show like this, but the priority is who's the next guy. I heard over the weekend that they made a hard push for Dusty May and
headed to Michigan.
And if I'm putting two and two together, I think he really did consider it. I think they must have thought there was some traction there, and then Michigan probably swayed him in whatever way you had to sway him. But they were in on that.
And if you have a head coach opening and you're not pursuing Dusty May, you're not doing
right,
your job.
Right, right. So they're, you could tell they're shooting high with what they're looking for. I hope they find the right guy. It's not always about getting the biggest name. It's about the right guy in the school. So that's where Vanderbilt is now. And that is way more important than this conversation we're about to have. But Bryce Drew is in a league right now that has no NIL. That league is a poor league, right? I don't think... you know, Belmont, I don't think Lipscomb, I don't think Middle Tennessee, Austin Peay have a lot of NIL dollars. They have probably scarce dollars. They're trying to find ways to do it. Grand Canyon does. Grand Canyon has a major advantage over the teams they're playing against, and thus, they're doing it. But that being said, Bryce Drew can recruit. Bryce Drew knows how to get good players. I think the biggest question I have with Bryce Drew, like you were talking about chaotic, I feel like the discipline, the attention to detail is one of the things that was lacking, in my opinion, watching his Vanderbilt teams. And I think for Vanderbilt to win, you've got to have total attention to detail. You've got to win on the margins over teams that are going to have more raw talent. Mm-hmm. That being said, here's the team that Bryce Drew gets to Vanderbilt. He takes Kevin Stallings' leftovers, basically, and sneaks into the NCAA tournament, loses to Northwestern in the first round, a game that they had right in the palm of their hand, could have gone either way. They made a big mistake at the end of the game. They fouled intentionally with the game tied. Mm-hmm. Matthew Fisher Davis, God bless him, it was a big mistake, right? And they lose the game. Good year, though. Very good first year for Bryce Drew. They fall back the next year and go like 12 for 20. Oh, well, speak of the devil. They have their next guy.
A little bit of breaking news.
Wow.
That's perfect because they asked them to hold off on announcing the
until we had to talk about Bryce Drew.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
The Bryce Drew history lesson?
Breaking news, this coming in from CBS Sports, Vanderbilt hires Mark Byington, James Madison's coach. James Madison, 32-4 this past season. JMU's a solid team.
I was hearing that over the weekend that he was in the mix. Bobby Kremen's guy, longtime Georgia Tech coach. I liked the way he was playing. They had a terrible game yesterday, obviously. If you watch their game, and that was one of my take it to the banks, they were just flat out better than Wisconsin. They were really, really good. Over 30 wins this year. So, interesting choice. I don't know much about him other than that. And just watching his teams from afar, but I'll have the same questions that I would of any coach. Can you take that formula? How are you going to get your players? To me, attention to detail is going to be a big part of the next Vanderbilt coach. You've got to have that down, but you've got to get the guys, right? You've got to get your guys. Is he connected? Now, Bobby Kremen's, he used to be able to get his guys, right, for Georgia Tech. That was never the problem. Kenny Anderson, Dennis Scott. I mean, you go back through the he got his players. He knew how to connect. He had the New York ties. So I don't know anything about this guy and how he recruits, but the recruiting part obviously is huge.
It's massive.
Because I am told, and I've checked around, that the budget they have for NIL is legit. It's not the top in the league. It never will be. But it is competitive, and they will be able to have something to work with. They're not going around going, do you want to come to Vanderbilt? Do you want to come to Vanderbilt? No. They know what they have to do to get players. Like you've been saying, D-Mace, you can't. It's a new era. It's basically pro basketball. Like it or not, you can't just play the high and mighty, we're Vanderbilt, we don't need to do that. You've got to get in that game, and I'm told they are in that game.
And you don't need to have the most robust and lucrative NIL.
Right, you got to be smart with it.
Have good coaches. I think Texas A&M is the perfect example of that. Texas A&M was throwing out 6-7-figure deals to 5 stars across the country at one of the most star-studded recruiting classes in the 2022 class. And what'd they do with it? They went 5-7. So it's not just about the money, although that's a massive, massive part of it.
And basketball, we're talking about less players, right? Yeah. You can play it different ways, but you're not. It's different than building a football team with as many players as you need to have a good football roster. So that formula is more challenging for Vanderbilt. For basketball, though, I think if you play your cards right and you have a decent amount of NIL to work with, I think that should not inhibit you as much as it could, right? If you, I can think of some chancellors in the past that would have said, NIL, that's not what Vanderbilt's all about. Yeah. You're coming for an education, all that. I mean, that those days are over, right?
It's nice just not. And all, but
You got to play the game if you're going to play in the SEC. So. Yeah. Intriguing hire.
Well, yeah, you
got he's a hot name, right? If he weren't going to Vanderbilt, he was going to go somewhere
else. Somebody
else
is going to hire him. His James Madison teams have been good. But it will be, you know, now he's stepping up in competition. Now, how will that look? I don't know. I guess a lot of it is predicated on, you know, frankly, the NIL and how many good players they can get in here. You know, and how many players are going to, you know, he may have to flip this whole roster. You know, guys may be leaving. Guys may be entering a portal. Can he convince guys to come back who were here last year that may enter the portal? That and the NIL are two things that, you know, obviously recruiting, but recruiting is a part of NIL now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you say you got all this money. Now it's time to put up or shut up. It's time for you to show this new coach, that you're serious about winning games. And in today's sports, being serious means paying the money. Because, listen, you only need one, maybe two players to change your program. And then you start winning, other players want to come. They're going to want the money. But, you know, if you already got a team set, they're more inclined to possibly take a little less if they know they got an opportunity to not just get in the in March Madness, but obviously win it. So,
and that's step one.
Yeah.
Get in the tournament. It's been too long since Vanderbilt has been in the tournament. That's step one.
But they can change this. They can change this in a year.
Well,
you can change it in
Okay, so here the Kremen's background is when Kremen's left Georgia Tech and then went to College of Charleston for a long time. Charleston has won a lot of games over a long, long period of time, a quintessential mid-major that is legit, right? Is relevant.
Yeah.
So his claim to fame, he's a good recruiter. Went to Georgia Southern, had some solid teams there. He had five out of the 6 years had a really good record within the league, but they never made it to the NCAA. But they had consistent winners. Then at James Madison, he's been there for 4 years. The last two have been really, really good. And this year, 32-4 broke through. So, interesting. He must think he could win at Vanderbilt. That's the first thing I think. Because he probably would have had options as the hot name, right?
But
we're going
to
learn more. Like, the question is always going to be, like, the formula at James Madison, the formula at Georgia Southern, the formula at Charleston is different than the formula at Vanderbilt. Who you're going up against is a lot different.
Competition's much stiffer.
But I think if you're a great recruiter and you have some NIL to work with, I think you can find some players. And then what you do from there is important too. So I don't know enough about the X's and O's and all of that stuff, but I think attention to detail will be important. And interesting.
It kind of sounds like the antithesis maybe of Jerry Stackhouse, where what was the one criticism or the biggest criticism of Jerry Stackhouse? It wasn't that he couldn't coach. Absolutely, he could coach. It was about, can he recruit? Does he care about recruiting? Well, if that's it, this coach is Mark Byington's claim to fame, then you're at least checking that box. And the other question I have is, how much more is Vanderbilt willing to change? Because you can change coaches and you can bring in new people and you can get a fresh face and a fresh perspective and new messaging and new players. But are you willing? And it sounds like Vanderbilt is, but I want to see it. Are you willing to put the money on the table and to give coaches what they need, the resources that they need in order to be competitive in this league? Because I think Bryce Drew could be the example. Mm-hmm. At Vanderbilt, goes 0-18 in SEC play in his final year. At Grand Canyon, he's made the tournament 3 out of his last 4 seasons. I don't think that's Bryce Drew all of a sudden just figuring things out in a couple of seasons. It's different of resources.
That was such a whirlwind, him getting, just to try to give you the short version.
Yeah.
When they went 0-19 to finish the season, 0-18 in the league, lost the first game in the SEC tournament. Here are the guys he had on that team.
Garland is the big one.
Darius Garland.
Yep. That's the biggest
one. He got hurt in the 6th game. Like, I was, the Predators were playing the LA Kings. Mm-hmm. Vanderbilt was playing USC. I went to the game. Hal Gill came with me. We watched Darius Garland play. They beat USC, who had a lot of talent. And I was like, okay, this is going to be really interesting. And then, of course, a week later, he hurt his meniscus against Kent State.
Mm-hmm.
Against Kent State. They lost the game, and he didn't play again.
Nope.
I think he sort of played it safe. He didn't want to play through it. There was a lot of different ways that could have gone. Absolutely understandable, for sure. But here's what's weird. This is where, again, attention to detail comes into play. Without Darius Garland, they had a McDonald's All-American in Simi Chatu, who was an underachiever, freshman, too young, not experienced. He got big-time exploited. Mm-hmm. But a guy that he's playing professionally somewhere now. Talented guy.
Yeah.
He was coming off an ACL, didn't play well. Saban Lee, in the NBA right now.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Nesmith, freshman, in the NBA right now. Matt Ryan, in the NBA right now.
The quarterback?
Not that Matt Ryan. But a really good shooter who was a transfer from Notre Dame.
What can he do?
Exactly.
Yanni Wetzel, who went to San Diego State, had some huge years after Bryce Drew left.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think a lot of people are going, why were they not competitive at all? Even though I know you lost Darius Garland, but should have done better. Everything just kind of snowballed out of control. They had some nightmare. They looked awful. And somewhere in the mix, here comes Malcolm Turner as the brand new athletic director, an ill-fated hire that shouldn't have been the hire.
Mm-hmm.
He comes in, he sees this, they look terrible, and he just pulls the plug after 3 years of Bryce Drew, which was definitely a tough pulling the rug out from under a guy that was having an awful year. He was the first to admit. But it was still, amongst the coaching fraternity, a quick hook, would you say? Like, I don't know what would have happened if he had kept those guys around, but Bryce Drew can get players. That wasn't the problem. It was, what do you do with those players? And they were super young. I don't know what the next couple years would have looked like because I think he would have recruited better rather than start over with Jerry Stackhouse and you had sort of a mass exodus. A lot of those guys left. And then Nesmith got hurt the next year. That was very, Stackhouse had a lot of bad luck with injuries and stuff too on top of everything else.
So will things be different for Vanderbilt new head coach. Again,
well,
this is breaking
he's going to have
news.
To go get a new team. Like he's going to like I don't know how many of these guys are in the portal right
they're
now.
They're
going
to have to give
back.
Him time to build this team. They're going to have to.
In this day and age, though,
how
you can turn
you can turn
your roster over quick. In general, at Vanderbilt, though, where the transfer credits and everything is a little trickier than it is. No offense to the other schools, but I do think at Vanderbilt transfers are a little trickier. Mm-hmm. How much leeway do they try to give him? To, you know, go to the top of the university and say, you know, we got a new basketball coach here. Can you help the guy out? Like, I do think that game was worth exploring, but I am curious to see what he does to try to get off to a better start. Because because Jerry Stackhouse had nothing. He didn't know how to do it. You know, he didn't have the recruit. I think this guy will have a very right, and he did, and didn't want to do anything else.
And
really,
you can't do that in this league.
Byington is cut from a different cloth. He's one of those guys who has been a recruiter. He's got that in his blood, and that hopefully will serve him well.
Breaking news: Vanderbilt has their new men's basketball coach, Mark Byington from JMU. JMU had a 32-4 season, made it to the NCAA tournament, 9 winning seasons in 11 years throughout his stint as a head coach. Mark Byington, the next head coach at Vanderbilt. I want to get your thoughts on that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll get your thoughts on that. Any March Madness thoughts, Vols fans. I know Creighton's a good team. But is falling short of the Elite Eight not good enough for this team? All of your thoughts on that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D. Mace, and Hayes score big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. That's right, a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. Go online to leecompany.com/giveaway to enter. That's leecompany.com/giveaway in the 10K Power Play giveaway. Contest entries are accepted until Saturday, April 20th. Lee Company, all you need.
Start spreading the news.
Caroline, Willie, D-Vase, say tomorrow it's your chance to participate today in Preds Pick to Click. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the Preds game tomorrow night, you win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate with Robbie and Rexroad tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. List your home with TJ to get your home seen, heard, and sold. So breaking news coming in from CBS Sports. Vanderbilt has found their guy, their next men's basketball coach, Mark Byington from JMU, with 32-4 this past season with JMU, made the tournament. I want to get your thoughts on that, but first, did you guys see the headline in the Lexington newspaper today?
Yes. Because you sent it to us.
I'm sure all Kentucky fans saw it as well.
The Herald Leader, the local Lexington paper, the headline is $33 million Calipari buyout would be wrong thing to do. Fine. That's your opinion. Mm-hmm. It'd be one thing just to, you know, have that opinion, but when Calipari is spelled with a K... In the Lexington local newspaper, there's a lot of speculation amongst Kentucky fans that this is a jab at I guess we could call him Coach K 2.0 now.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, listen, if a news outlet or, you know, a print outlet in North Dakota or Detroit or... I don't know.
Even that's unacceptable.
Yeah, even that's unacceptable to be Detroit. Let's say, I don't know, Wyoming.
Like Rinky Dink Town, USA.
Yeah, some little small town that has just like two, you know, writers or something like that. If they sort of, you know, they misprinted, not necessarily that they wrote it wrong, but it just got misprinted, then okay, we can say, there's only going to be, what, maybe 100 of those circulating. But when you... The people right in your backyard, like, they're right there with you.
The local Lexington paper. Like, Lexington Sports is Kentucky.
Yeah, that's all. It's just Kentucky. That's it. When you talk about Lexington Sports, it's Kentucky.
And when you talk about Kentucky Sports, it's Cal.
Exactly. That's the professional team there. And y'all spell his name wrong? Yeah, I think that was a dig. I think that was a dig, yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to think it wasn't intentional. They, that's how bad it is.
Yeah,
it
it's like, because that's in all of, that's Lexington Herald. How many do they print probably a day? Let's just say they print 1,000 a day. Man. So there's 1,000 papers out there with his name spelled with a K rather than a C. They trolling him, I think.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. I hope they are.
I hope they are, too.
Yeah, because that was a big misprint right there.
Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Unacceptable what Cal has done in the last 4 years of Kentucky. The lack of what he's done.
Right? Okay.
Well,
so,
that
so
was
here's
unacceptable,
my question.
And what Cal has done is unacceptable. So yeah. They go both hand in hand.
So what is the better formula to win if you're Kentucky going forward? To replace Calipari, pay him all that money, whatever it's going to take, or to for John Calipari to say, okay, it's time for me to continue to tweak my formula. The one and done, the young team is not the way to go. I've got to find a better way to get the kind of team to get because he can get players, right? I don't think he's ever going to out X and O his way to a national championship. Never has, but he will be able to get the players. I think it's just a matter of reapplying because you have no shortage of resources. So is that the better way to go, or is it to scrap it and go somewhere? I mean, forget about what it would take to get rid of him because you got to pay him a gigantic amount, which is probably no skin off of Kentucky's back. They'll do it if they want to. But are you really going to do better? Like, I think it's a little bit be careful what you wish for. Like,
I think they could the guy absolutely he replaced, we could do better.
I do want to remind Kentucky fans because they have purged this guy from their memory, but Billy Gillespie was the coach. And when Tubby Smith resigns, now we'll do better. We got it. We need to get rid of Tubby. Tubby was no good. He won with Patino's players. He never did anything. This is going to be great, Billy Gillespie. And he was a nightmare. He was a nightmare. They stunk. So you can do better, but you can do worse. So who would you rather have? I get it. If you just want something new, maybe Cal wants something new at this point. He's gone through all the ups and downs. He knows about the stresses, the microscope you're under there. I'm really intrigued what happens there.
I look at it and I say there's always a risk involved with moving on from a coach because you could bring someone in that was significantly worse than what you had and you will look back and say, I wish we knew how good that we had it. But there's also the other side of that coin of, well, we can get out of the first round of the tournament. Because Kentucky hasn't been doing a whole lot of getting out of the first round of the tournament lately. First round exits the last 2 years, a second round exit the year before that, and before
that.
Well,
they lost in
the
second round last year. They won the first game and then lost to Kansas State last year. 2 years ago
two
is when they lost to St.
Peter's. Okay, yeah. Thank you. So in the last 3 years, it's been two first
missed
round
missed the tournament
exits.
Entirely the
and
year before
and
that.
And missed the tournament entirely. So if I'm a Kentucky fan asking myself,
to the standard,
can we do better? I don't know. I think you can find a lot of coaches that can get you out of the first round of the tournament more than once every 4 years.
Is that just a run of bad luck? How many times? You play that game over against Oakland 20 times. I don't think it goes the same way.
But we ain't got 20 times.
I know. The same thing with St. Peter's. It is excruciating if you're a Kentucky fan. I know a lot of them. They live and die with this stuff.
Yeah.
It's not. It is just not acceptable. But there is reality. I think it's more about his roster construction. And I think he could change that roster construction and do well.
Is he willing to change?
That's the question.
Whether his roster...
The game is changing.
No, whether his roster construction stays the same or not, he has to figure out a way at coaching better, getting these guys to buy in on both ends of the court. This wasn't a good defensive team. They were a great offensive team. You got to find, as a head coach, you got to find a way to, how do I get them better on the defensive end? Listen, you may have to, your recruiting tactics, not to say you don't try to go out there and get five-star recruits, because that's what you try to do, because you want to build your team. But Cal, you may need to go get some grunt players that are not five-star guys, guys that are maybe three-star guys, that has that hunger, to want to be a four or five-star guy once they, end up their college career. They want to be considered one of the better college players at that point in time. You want to have guys that want to work for it hard. I think you got to have a mixture of both. You know, yes, you got to have your five-star, your uber athletes. You got to have those. Mm-hmm. But then you got to have the guys that want to work hard, on both ends of the court. More importantly, probably on the defensive end of the court, because he's tried this philosophy of having a younger team mixed with some older guys or just an all, you know, young team. He's tried it several different ways. So let's not act as if, oh, every year Cal has only had freshmen. No, it hadn't been that way. He had some teams that had some sophomores and juniors and seniors. Shibue was a damn ultra senior.
Yeah, Shibue was like 30.
Yeah, exactly. And they couldn't win with the Naismith Award winner. Mm-hmm. He couldn't win the championship with him. So he has to find out, how do I coach these guys? Not just from an offensive scheme. How do I coach them from a defensive scheme? I need them to play. If this team would have played better defense, they would have went further, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree with that.
I don't think that the excuses work for Cal anymore. There's a standard, and that standard has not been met, and it hasn't been met for far too long. We're talking about Kentucky. Kentucky might be the, what, fourth, fifth best team in the SEC? That's not Kentucky standards.
But the SEC is not – what are you, it's tough.
It's tough.
League. It's a pro league.
But that's the expectation at Kentucky. All right, we'll catch up with TD coming up next. We'll get TD's thoughts on the L'Jarius Sneed trade and what the Titans have done so far in free agency. Tron Davenport joins us coming up next. Caroline Villie-DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.